Good morning. Did I switch it the right way? Go the other way? This is okay? All right. So Ron and Deb, it's their anniversary. I think it's 40th, 41st. Anybody know? 40th? Yeah, so anyway. So I assume, so Tom, that's the camera? Okay, happy anniversary from everybody. He's not watching right now, so, but we'll get him later though. As soon as I came in, Tom had commented, you didn't have to wear a jacket for this. Do you ever look at Ron? And so I was taught that, yes, if you're going to be preaching, you're going to be speaking publicly anytime, here's what you do. Here's the rule of thumb. Whatever the average is, do one small step above that. It's not to make a statement other than a statement of respect and love to put everybody at ease. And so if everybody wears suits, if all the guys wear suits, ladies wear dresses, you wear a three-piece suit. If everybody's in shorts and flip-flops, you wear jeans and a long-sleeve shirt. It's whatever, just that one little step above. So anyway, which tells us that Ron doesn't care that much about it. So, all right. And also need a place for my glasses. That's the most important. And I'm just noticing that, wow. Missing page. So, yeah, the first page. So, that's awesome. So, let me come back to this. We're good. This is awesome. There's a page somewhere between here and my bedroom, and it's not here. Anyway, that's all right. So this is actually, I'll think of it as a remix. About 2 years ago, actually it was Easter 2 years ago, I did preach on a particular topic from Hebrews 11 and 12. No slides today, so I'll be doing some reading, you can read along for part of it, and then some of it you won't have, but just you'll have to rely on me versus the nifty slides that Ron produces for us. So, 2 years ago or so, there's a particular topic on our true home, and regarding Hebrews 11 and 12. And there are, just over the past several months, there have been these consistent reminders that of the truths of that, from that particular sermon, that have kind of been percolating in the background with me. And so this past week, I thought, I know the direction I want to go for today, but I continue to get pulled back into an idea that, again, I've kind of wrestled with for some time, so I took that idea again, and I'm reworking it just a little bit for this morning. Life is hard. It really is. It just, you know, the younger you are, the hardness is, well, I've got the school, I've got this, I don't know how I see myself. Life isn't fair. There are terrible things happening on earth. And those are all real things. As time goes on, the hard becomes very personal in the sense of, I hurt, things don't work, I've got to get poked and prodded and things happen and family issues and squabbles and things happen and there's heartbreak and all of that, and it just continues on and continues on. And the end of the story, humanly speaking, is not good. Some years ago, my mom, before she passed away in 2011, she wanted to go back and see kind of her hometown, which is Sicily Island, Louisiana. A little town just inside the Louisiana line from Natchez. And she had not been there in decades, probably 60 years or so, or more. And so a couple of my brothers took her there, and they were revisiting some of these little crossroads. And it really is not much more than a few series of crossroads with a couple of stores here and a gas station there. And that's kind of about it. She wanted to see the house she grew up in, or at least lived when she was small. She wanted to see the church building where they went, and the creek where she was baptized and that sort of thing. She has memories, fond memories. We look back and romanticize about what was, even though, you know, when we were there, it's probably not as good as we, you know, fantasize about what the good old days were like. And she gets there, and the trip was a success. She loved the trip. I saw pictures of it. I wasn't able to go. Brothers took a number of pictures for her, and so it was a really nice time to for her. One of the things she recognized, though, early on, the first place she wanted to go was she wanted to go to the house that she remembers on a small farm. They produced most of their own food, and on Sundays they were wealthy enough to have enough chickens to slaughter a chicken for Sunday lunch. That was kind of, that was the high point. And if the preacher was going to come over, he got the first shot at the best pieces of chicken, and the leftovers ended up with the children and that kind of thing. She had good memories of those days, and as she got there, there was a foundation in the middle of a field and some bricks that were kind of in a rubble where their fireplace was, and that was the house. And it was in the middle of a field of about 100 acres or so, and it was just sort of abandoned and sold off. There's fencing, so there's cattle roaming and that sort of thing. And then they drove to where her old church building was, and it actually was still there, had not been used in probably 50 years. It was just a shack in a field somewhere a couple of miles from there. They drove back down to where she was baptized in the creek and small river tributary that ran into the Mississippi. It was still there. So she, the tire swings and the different things she could remember were gone, but it was still there. Time after time, she ran into what we all run into as things change, especially if it has to do with the world. It is dilapidating. And we to keep up with a house, you have to put a lot of work into it, or it will fall apart slowly, sometimes quickly. If you've got raw wood, you better seal it up, because 5 years, 10 years, it's got to be replaced. Give it 20, 30, it won't be there anymore, except a pile. That's the world. That's us. That's what we have to expect. So, some years ago, when I was still in the Air Force, I was sent to Kuwait for a few months, and it was interesting in that I saw it as sort of there's this romanticism about it, because there were moments I thought maybe I was born in the wrong place at the wrong time. You had right on the Persian Gulf, these breezes coming in, blazing hot during the day, but right on the Gulf, the breezes, the foods. It's the first time I'd ever had Middle Eastern food. And I thought, oh, I like this. And we spent time in the evenings as we'd get off base, going into town, the markets, the people. It was actually enjoyable. I really did like that there. It kind of pulled apart some stereotypes I had of some things. And there were a lot of curious things. I saw a fist fight without fists. They just took off headpieces and would slap each other with them. And the loser was the one that cowered and left. Sort of like two cats fighting. One knows it's eventually lost. You don't fight to the death. It's just, okay, I'm back. And you go, I thought that was odd. So that's not an American thing, so I suppose. But of all the things I saw there, there was a sense of the whole time I was there of this beauty. It was desert, though, so you didn't have trees unless they were planted and manicured. You have greenery, but there was something beautiful about it. But the whole time I knew that I was there, while I was there, I knew something's off, something's wrong, as I would interact with people in town, usually the market keepers who would try to sell me something. And I reminded all of them of their son. You remind me of my son. You come here, I have a special deal for you. And I thought, your son is pasty white and doesn't look anything like you, and wow. But they always had a special deal for me because I reminded them of their son. First thing we would do is, they wouldn't sell in the traditional markets, they wouldn't sell to me because there are no prices on anything. They'd sit you down and give you a choice of tea, coffee, or they would have the little Cokes, and they wouldn't want to sit and talk to you first. and they would want to know about my father, my grandfather, what they did. They were trying to establish how much money I had. And then the prices would vary depending on my lineage. If your father was a successful businessman, now I know something. The price just doubled. That sort of thing. And I found out later that's actually what was going on. But they want to know you. They want to know your family. So it's about your family. And I thought, all these things are neat. All of these moments, though, that were so different as I spent time there in those months I was there, I knew I was a stranger. I was a foreigner, and I didn't belong, no matter how much I was attracted to the moment. I was just passing through, and I had no real rights to that land, other than those that were temporarily agreed upon by the United States government and the Kuwaiti government. Those were the only rights I had, and that was temporary. I was a visitor. I had no roots there. I didn't belong there. It was fun. I liked it there, but I didn't belong there. It was not for me. I was an exile. We usually think of that word as one who's kicked out, perhaps, an exile. We exile. In modern English, that's sort of what it means. Literally, we see in the first century Mediterranean world, that term, at least in Greek, refers to a sojourner, someone who's traveling through. Not kicked out necessarily of any place, someone who's passing through. They don't belong in the new place. They're transitional. They're moving through somewhere. I didn't fit, no matter how much I wanted to hold on to the romance of that moment. It was like grasping at the sand that daily was just blowing through. It would end up in your socks, underwear, and it was amazing. How does it get there? And it was just, I didn't mind it that much because I thought, this is kind of neat. I wouldn't want to live there, but you know, for that reason. But there was something attractive about it. But it was like grasping at that, trying to not have that happen. I just didn't fit. There's nothing I could do to make my sojourner status any less true. So whether you've responded to Christ's call to your life to follow him or not, you're a stranger in this land. This land that's falling apart, you are not meant to be here. And so those moments you have when you think, something's wrong, everything's wrong, life is falling apart, right? It's life. That's just it. It falls apart. It's not great. We have great moments, and I like living. I'm not going to walk in front of a bus coming down the street today, but we don't belong here. We weren't made for the world you see. Christ follower or not, you weren't made for the world you see around you. You were made for something else. You are an exile. You're just passing through. You are a sojourner. You do have a place you belong, a relationship and a place you were literally designed for. You have a purpose. But this isn't it. And for any of us. I know, and I've gotten to know, over the years I've met people who are bizarrely wealthy. They live a different life than I do. And I met my first billionaire about 3 years ago. Actually a very nice guy. Contributes hundreds of millions of dollars a year to charitable causes, to missions, to whatever. And he actually gets his hands dirty in the middle of it. One of the most grounded people I've ever met. But in all of the things that he has access to, he will admit, and he has admitted to me, that now this doesn't make me happy, though. Happiness comes from somewhere else. He is a Christ follower. But his goal is he must use it for other people. And so he gives it away. Lives in a house probably only about the size of mine now. And now it's a heck of a lot nicer. But, you know, and for his world, it's not that extravagant. He recognizes this isn't his world. Don't put down too many roots. There's something that he needs to do while he's here, and I'll end with that a bit later. Let me tell you a little bit about who you really are. C.S. Lewis, you may not know C.S. Lewis quotes when you hear them, but they're all around us. They're actually very popular. There's one in particular, a passage in particular, that I've heard before, and I originally didn't know it was Lewis. It was actually from Mere Christianity. The first time I read it was in high school, I think. And I don't remember this because I wasn't really ready to hear it. It didn't make too much sense. Now, at this point in life, it makes total sense. So mere Christianity, Lewis writes, creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exist. A baby feels hunger. Well, there is such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim. Well, there is such a thing as water. Men feel sexual desire. Well, there is such a thing as sex. If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for a different world. If none of my earthly pleasures satisfy it, that does not prove that the universe is a fraud. Probably, earthly pleasures were never meant to satisfy it, but only to arouse it, to suggest the real thing. If that is so, I must take care, on the one hand, never to despise or be unthankful for those earthly blessings, and on the other, never to mistake them for something else of which they are only a kind of a copy or echo or mirage. I must keep alive in myself the desire for my true country, which I shall not find until after death. I must never let it get snowed under or turned aside. I must make it the main object of life to press on to that other country and to help others do the same. So in that 16, 17-year-old Bill, I read that, thought, okay, whatever, and passed on. And at some point along the way, some years ago, and then each time I read that, I thought, yeah, that's exactly right. I'm comfortable here, but it's more of a, I've become passive. If I feel too comfortable, I realize probably it's because I have a passive view of life. I'm not looking at the horrible things around me. To some extent, that's true, but the reality is, that is life. That really is life. Life on the world, people are terrible. Us, we at our best, you know, separate us from Christ. Oh my goodness, we're capable of terrible things. Some of you were alive when Hitler was a thing, right? The rest of us, I had to rely on mom's stories, who was right in the middle of all of that at her age. And we read, but the reality is there are many, you know, potentates today, and there are people who are aspiring to that role. That's awful. How can someone become like that? Well, we don't have to look too far. You know, find the little selfish moments in our lives, given time and power and enough money and enough whatever, in the absence of a vision of our true country, and things go south quickly. And we know that. And the older you are, the more you realize that. It's just, Larry, sorry to pick on you, but Crank, I'm not sure if he's asleep or not, so I'll pick on you because you're up there too. Am I right in that? And we've had conversations about that before. It's the way it is. So does that mean this is a terrible place? Well, it's not our true country. We stay there. Well, let's leave it there. It's not our true country, but our true country is something else. And we don't feel comfortable here. We feel unsettled here because we weren't made for this. We were made for something else. We were designed for something else. Well, what comes next? It's about that other country. I'm going to plagiarize several lines from someone else's sermon. No one knows the author of this sermon other than to say that it was originally written in Greek. The author's Greek language skills are considered among Greek scholars to be the finest of all New Testament writers. Whoever wrote this was exceptionally well-educated, exceptionally well-versed, exceptionally good at his or her craft. You're familiar with the title of the sermon. We usually call it the Book of Hebrews. So, you can turn with me to Hebrews 11. I won't read through all of it, but I'll skip through this, make some commentary, and then we'll wrap things up. But I want this sermon writer to speak to us. So, turn to Hebrews 11. I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. So Hebrews 11, and we'll dabble right into Hebrews, the first part of Hebrews 12, right after that. There's a lot that can be done, entire sermons, many sermons can be done from this passage. There's so much there. There's one sort of thread of thought that I want to spend time with as we read through this together. I'll start with verse 1, Hebrews 11, verse 1. All right. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, for by it the people of old received their commendation. By faith we understand that the universe was created by the word of God, so that when what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. I could spend a lot of time just on that one passage. I'll spare us with that. Backing up, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. In our modern English thinking and language, faith is something that you have and something you haven't seen. It could be anything. I have faith that I'm going to make some money today. I have faith that these are wishes. This was not the understanding of that first century writer. I have faith in what I hope for. And hope is not wishful thinking. Hope had to do with what is in reach or plain sight, or, and as I'll get into this here in a little bit because it comes up in this passage, something you already have grasp of. So if I have the title to my car, that's the legal documentation that says I own the car. And so if I am here looking at that title with my name on it and take a step away, I hope for that title. It is my possession, but I'm not holding it. It is the thing that I desire. It is mine, but I'm hoping for it. My hope and my faith is tied in, I own that car, and here's the piece of paper that says it, whether I'm holding it or not. So hope was more than, it was not wishful thinking. And that's important. So by faith, and then we go through several verses, we'll land, around verse 8, but you have several people mentioned. By faith, Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain. That's verse 4. Verse 5, by faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death. We go on, verse 7, by faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark. And verse 8, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. He went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward, verse 10, to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. Backing up to verse 8. Those first few verses tell of someone who, he was called to go to a place he was to receive as an inheritance. It was not, he had no title, he had no piece of paper that said, this is your property. He didn't have a physical thing in front of him, but it was promised. The language here, in that first century language, is the promise wasn't something to come, it had already happened. The promise was the proof. The promise was the tangible thing that you could hold on to and know, it's my land. That's what's been promised. It really has happened, but it's a promise. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, we know the story. We grow up hearing many stories about this. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Verse 9, by faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac, Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. His hope wasn't actually in that tract of land. He knew it was going to happen. There's a lot of value to that. But he trusted that God would give him that. But his faithfulness in living out, getting rid of the old, stepping away from that, going out, not knowing the route, the path where he was going, packing up him, his family, packing up everything, and going through the desert to a place where he wasn't really sure how to get there even. It was that way. And it took a long time, a lot longer than if you were today, put a backpack on and just walked. You could do it in a few days. It was longer than that because God had a path, and it wasn't that straight path. But he was going by faith. So he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. The point here was that he was acting on faith and trusting because his true hope was in a land that was not the land that he was about to move to. He was counting on, he was trusting in, and he was assured that by doing this act on earth, he was inheriting something just as real, which is a heavenly home, a permanent home that no one could take from him. So it was a symbol. His faith was a symbol of the trust he had and the desire he had for a permanent home, one that wasn't going to eventually fall apart, as every land will do. So several names have been mentioned, verse 13, and these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. These all died in faith, meaning when they died, none of them had the promise. The deed to the property, the title to the car, it was right there. It was theirs. But they weren't able to pick it up. But they saw it. Verse 13, but not having seen them and greeted them from afar, having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. That phrase, but having seen them, verse 13, but having seen them and greeted them from afar is literally, here's the implication. You can see me and I can see you. And afar doesn't mean 1,000 miles away. The implication is I am right here and I'm saying, morning, John. Good morning. Hey, I'm out here. Greeting, and we're having a conversation. You're right there. You're not 1,000 miles away. You're right there. I can get even closer and even closer. You're right there. I can greet you. It's real. If I say, I hope to meet you and greet you today, well, I've symbolically done that. If shaking hands seals that, it's just as real as if it's right there. It's not far away. It's literally right there. If I could, I hope I'm going to hug everybody in this row. You may run, block the doors, but I'm greeting you. It's as if that's not a thing that, oh, I hope for $1 million today. That's our modern Western understanding. That's not it at all. It's real. It is right there. And that is the language being used here in verse 13. But these all died in faith, not meaning, oh, they died. Oh, if they only could have seen. They did see. They saw the title. They saw the deed. They saw it. And their names were on it. They just physically didn't step into it. But they knew that that was an affirmation that something else is to come. Something permanent, something perfect, something good. Listen, these folks knew. These were people who lived on the land. How many of you grew up on a farm? A true farm. I mean, real farm. Not like, you know, where things die, things are raised, things are slaughtered, things happen. And so we're slowly away from that. But 100 years ago, even here in the U.S., would hear something different. 200 years ago, they're hearing something different. You go back 2,000 years. It was very, and 3,000 for these actual characters to have lived. It was understood. Life is hard. Life isn't. So when they say blessing, blessing is you have food for today. You know, blessing is that's good. And you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And if you lose everything tomorrow, that doesn't mean God hates you. You are in a broken world. And what your hope is for something else. You are designed for something else. Okay? All right. So these all died in faith, not having received the things that were promised. And it goes on, they were seeking a homeland. Goes on, by faith, Moses in verse 23, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw the child was beautiful. And that word literally is from in the, that several times he was described as beautiful in such a way similar to what an unblemished lamb would be described as. For the Hebrews, he was, there's an entire group of Jewish thought that there's Abraham, oh, but then there's Moses. Because Moses was perfect. And there's actually a thought in some branches of Judaism that still kind of holds to that. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, verse 24, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered, verse 26, he considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. He gave up everything because he saw he was a sojourner. The stories are consistent for all of these people, and it's linked to us today. We are to see this life is not, this is transient. Don't lay hold of what you see around you. I mean, for a time, it makes practical sense. We, you know, but just keep understanding, it's just a tool. Money, it's a tool. Property, it's a tool. These are things we're not to put our faith in and hope in. And that's very clear from Scripture. We are hoping for something that is much greater. And that hope is, I'm looking at it right now with my name on it. It is mine. But I don't get to pick it up yet. But I see it right here. It's just as real as me greeting you. I know it's not crazy for me to think, I'm going to walk up, Mac, I'm going to grab you, give you a big hug. Not too big, because you know, I don't want to knock you down. But it's just as real. That's not crazy hope in modern thinking. That's real. I can do that. That's a real thing. These are the things that we're, this is the language we're given. The things we're hoping for are things that are not, it's not wishful thinking. We're not made for this land. We have hopes for something better. We recognize injustice. We recognize grief. We recognize those things because we're meant for something else. We're not wired to simply tolerate evil in front of us. When we see it in front of us, we hurt. We're not wired that way. Just not. And it goes on, verse 32, and what more shall I say? Verse 32, for time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak. If you remember the story, military leader, I think one of Deborah's military leaders, won some great battles. Samson, we knew, not the nicest guy in the world, probably. You know, he had some flaws, if you remember the story. We think of the Samson and the great strength and all the stuff, but if you look at the stories, he had some issues. Jephthah, oh my goodness. let's get Ron to preach a sermon about Jephthah. Just let's do a lesson sometime soon. This guy was messed up. And there was a, if you remember, a certain vow he made that was crazy. There are others. I was talking to my son Daniel here recently about how can these people of God have done these horrible things. That's confusing. Jephthah of David, we know David's story. And Samuel and the prophets, verse 33, who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight, women received back their dead by resurrection. All of these stories through the prophets, major and minor prophets. Some were tortured, refused to accept release so that they might rise again to a better life. In other words, refused to acknowledge that their faith was wrong. They refused to deny God. Others suffered mocking and flogging, or even others' chains and imprisonment. So lots of stories through the prophets of these events. They were stoned. They were sown in two. I think tradition says, Isaiah, not a good day, not an easy day on his last day. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and the caves of the earth. People who had everything taken from them were cast out and suffered. It wasn't too many years after this, the writer of Hebrews wrote these things, that actually some of those same events were going on with the first century Christians. Horrible things happened to them. Keep in mind, there are cultures today that, as a part of life, commit what we consider atrocities. Horrible things, and we think only animals do this. How? Well, we are in a place we don't belong. And all these, verse 39, and all these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. First two verses of chapter 12. Therefore, regarding all of these things, therefore, now here's the bridge. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, all of these people who were mentioned, and even that caveat, and there were so many others, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. If you've ran, there was a time when I ran distance. It was 80 pounds ago, and about 45 years ago, but it happened, and I remember hurting every step. I was not built for running. Some guys could run, girls could run, and it was like they were singing, they whatever, and they were good, and I thought, I earned every step. It hurt. I won't tell you what happened during some races, that if you ran distance, you know, maybe there are things that could happen. And I hurt with every step. I wanted to be out there with friends. I didn't love the running. I hated it. But my friends were doing it. I wanted to be with them and goof around and got somebody watching. So goofing around meant you've got to run. As long as you're running that way, you're okay. So I just wanted the experience of it. For some odd reason, I wouldn't do that anymore. But there's an endurance means that it's you're slogging through mud. It's like living in, South Georgia in August. Every step is just painful because of the humidity and the mosquitoes, and you take every breath and you're breathing a hot shower, but it's 6 o'clock in the evening on your back porch. I've lived there for years. It's horrid. But there's this endurance that you just keep going. Why? Well, Let us also lay aside, middle of verse 1, chapter 12, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter. Perfecter meaning the finisher, the one who completes our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. The cross wasn't the joy. He wasn't a masochist. He didn't go into it thinking, "That is a good day today." Who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. Despising literally meant he set aside the shame. So the terrible things, he faced them, but he was able to part those visions and see what was ahead and what was good. And is seated at the right hand of the throne of God as part of the Godhead. So we have a picture, a very clear picture in Scripture of our goal, our mission, our point. What's the point of us? Why even be here? There are catechisms, which, you know, I won't quote today, that go back centuries that remind us it's to know God, to love him, to make him known. The wording is different and over the centuries. That's our point. That's why we're here. We will fail. The best we can do here, it's going to fall apart when we're gone. Sorry, the best, we can vote however we want to. I'm not saying don't vote. There's a good point in that, and I'll finish with an idea here shortly of that. But those good policies here, give it time. They aren't so good anymore. We had a good start. And little by little, time goes on, and we're thinking, what has happened around us? What is going on? What are you nuts? To all sorts of things we can see around us. However, that doesn't mean we still don't engage and we aren't a part. Again, something coming up regarding that. Whether you follow Christ or not, this is not your home. There's another home. The question really does come down to not what you look like, not how much money you have, not how kind you are, not how good you were on earth, not the things you've ever done. It's who do you belong to? Who have you given yourself to? Who do you follow as a rule in your life? There is a point. There is a goal for those of us who follow Christ, that is to be with him and everyone who's gone before us who followed him for eternity. Not the perfect people, not the people who never blew it, did terrible things. We'll be shocked when you get to heaven and think, I didn't think, okay, got it. You know, it wasn't about the sin. Look at David, look at Jephthah, look at, oh my goodness. You know, look at a lot of people, look at me. You know, it's not about that. So, let me, in wandering through, there is a there's another Lewis quote from a very different book, though. If you've ever read the Chronicles of Narnia, so the last battle comes down to that. Chapter 16, for those who are truly devoted to this. Then Aslan, hopefully I'll not recap if you've never read them. Shame on you if you haven't. I'll give you until next week to read through them. Then Aslan turned to them and said, "You do not yet look so happy as I meant you to be." Lucy said, "We're so afraid of being sent away, Aslan, and you have sent us back into our own world so often." Now, Aslan is the Christ character, and Lucy is us, at least some of us. And we're so afraid of being sent away, Aslan. "And you have sent us back into our own world so often." "No fear of that," said Aslan. "Have you not guessed?" Their hearts leaped. This is, by the way, a spoiler if you don't know the story. This is how it all ends. So just, you know. Their hearts leaped, or and as a wild hope rose within them, there was a real railway accident, as part of the story earlier, said Aslan softly. Your father and mother and all of you, as you used to call it in the Shadowlands, meaning here. Yeah, this is a Shadowland. We're told we see through a veil dimly. We're not seeing what is. We see an echo of what God created. But there is what is better coming. Your father and mother and all of you are, as you used to call it in the Shadowlands, dead. The term is over. The school, there's schoolhouse and, you know, classroom wording here. The term is over. The holidays have begun. The dream is ended. This is the new morning. And he spoke, and as he spoke, he no longer looked to them like a lion, but the things that began to happen after that were so great and beautiful that I cannot write them. And for us, as this is the end of all the stories, and we can most truly say that they all lived happily ever after. But for them, it was only the beginning of the real story. All their life in this world and all their adventures in Narnia had only been the cover and the title page. Now, at least they were beginning chapter one of the great story, which no one on earth has read, which goes on forever, in which every chapter is better than the one before. So, everyone hearing this, either the two or three people watching, Ron eventually, Deborah, hi, again. Happy anniversary again if you skipped to this point and didn't watch the first of it. Everyone hearing this will live forever. Regardless of what you believe, how you live your life, who you know, the question is where. That's the question. So, let's pray. Father, thank you for Hebrews, the testimony of so many people who could see in the midst of terrors around them and horrors around them, who could see. Thank you for their testimony. Thank you for them. Father, give us here new language and new vision and new understanding and an understanding of hope and what it is and what it is not. Not the wishful thinking, but seeing in front of us a promise for a land that we cannot imagine, that is a true permanent promised land. In Jesus' name, amen.